Next case is 95-2093, City of Mayfield Heights versus Snappy Car Rental. Mr. Kanzler.
My name is Evan Kanzler. I represent the Paulie's Davis and Snappy Car Rental. Represents Snappy Car Rental. Who wishes to buy that argument? I will be arguing proposition of law 3, constitutional issues. Mr. Verrato will be arguing proposition of law 1, non-existent rape prevention bureau issue. We stand on our briefs in regard to propositions of law 2, 4, and 5. Wish to reserve 2 minutes to 3 minutes of time.
You'll need to watch your time on the clock if you want to do all that.
Yes. Okay. The constitutional issue of proposition law under the case very simple in my mind. We have a trial court that holds clear and convincing evidence established that the ordinance in issue is unconstitutional. We have a court of appeals that says that the appellants do not present sufficient or any evidence to overcome the presumption of validity. Now, we have an ordinance here that was adopted by the City of Mayfield Heights in 1974. They adopted at that time the basic Ohio Fire Code and added on to it the section of the ordinance that is issued here, which has to do with yard and systems. In that application, the city said we had large developments of over 15,000 square feet for industrial development, lumber yards, shopping centers, multi-family developments with other occupancies of that type, then the yard height system ordinance will apply. And for 11 years until the executive office part of zoning is adopted, which provides 2 to 3-story office buildings on 6-acre lots, the city does not do anything except require a single yard height interconnection to the water main in the street. The water main in the street is owned by the City of Cleveland, not the City of Mayfield Heights. The first building is built by my client in this new executive office part of zone, and the same rules apply, a single connection to the line in the street. Then the second building, the Snappy building, comes along, and suddenly the building commissioner and the fire chief say, no, you can't have a dual connection, a loop, to connect to that street.
And now what's wrong with that? The city is charged with the safety of its citizens and the city has decided that to provide optimum safety to the residents of these buildings, that there will be greater safety if the water lines are designed the way the city provides or orders than if they're designed with a dead-end line. What's unconstitutional about that?
Well, the problem is that, in my view, Your Honor, saying something doesn't make it so. It doesn't provide greater safety. It doesn't provide greater redundancy as the term is used. It doesn't provide a greater water supply or more water pressure. What the evidence establishes in this case is, number one, the city has no water pressure standards. It has no water supply standards. It has no studies that it's done to do any of the things that it attempted to determine. And their own expert, as well as the appellant's expert, agrees that there is more than enough water pressure, 3 to 4 times more than is established by the National Fire Protection Association in the water line on the street, 3 to 4 times more water available than the National Fire Protection.
But that's today, and that's today.
Absolutely.
I'm the hearing, and isn't there evidence that the Gates Mills was going to get city water and that the pipes are deteriorating? What's unconstitutional about a city requiring the ultimate in fire safety rather than something less than that? That's you can say, well, they didn't have to do it this way, but we're talking about constitutionality here.
And the benefits to the public don't match up here for a simple reason. What they're doing doesn't work. And their expert agrees with it, the appellant's expert agrees with it, I just demonstrated it in a whole way. The fact of the matter is, we have the City of Cleveland water line in the street owned by the City of Cleveland. And the arms being the two connections coming to a valve, shut off valve, which is my head, shut my mouth, shut it off, which is an argument. But the fact of the matter break here, I shut a valve off here. There's nothing to shut off here. I don't stop and flow the water. Likewise from the other side. It won't work on private property. It won't work on the street. But my client has to pay $25,000 to $40,000 more for this connection with no benefit result.
I thought one of the issues, factual issues, was that with this loop, that if that the first fire hydrant near the one end of the loop, the connection, when it's being used, the pressure at the other end of the line is going to decrease substantially, but that if you have a loop, you're getting water pressure from the other end of the loop to serve the rest of the building. Isn't that part of the reason, the rationale for the loop?
Actually, that doesn't stand up to the evidence, because the evidence in the case is, this is Mr. Samak, the building commissioner of the city of Naples. It's in the supplemental, page 78, page 39 of his testimony, where he says they always attach a pumper to the hydrant and pump the pressure needed. It matches up the testimony of the appellant's expert, Paul Fulton. The pumper is always there providing the air pressure, the water pressure needed to keep the constant pressure. It's a red herring argument. The fact of the matter is, and why should we wish to have this product argument as well, that this ordinance came down to the issue of what is a gridiron. And all the experts there agree that gridiron is the system of water lines in the public right of way. No question about it. Even appellee's expert agreed with that, even to the extent of doing calculations, which is starts on the supplemental page of 65-99, in which he assumed, Kelly's expert assumed, the pipes were 30 to 50 years old, which they weren't. There still is enough pressure, more than enough pressure in the water. So we have constant doubt of the presumption of validity of a constitutional ordinance saying that we can't attack, yet in this case, we have overwhelming evidence. Outlined it in our briefs that none of these things here are constitutional.
Counsel,
yes, sir.
Was this unconstitutional before you started the construction?
Was it unconstitutional? I don't know. I think the interpretation put out.
The point I'm trying to make is that you submitted plans, they were approved, and I assume that this was. It's known to you that this requirement was known to you before construction. You submitted plans, they were approved, and then you told the city after construction started that we're not going to comply with this 7-1 section.
Actually, no, the city agreed to contest the matter in court. The city filed a lawsuit in the answer to the question you're asking.
But you complained after construction started.
Yes, it was before the water lines were in.
Wasn't the same problem there? Couldn't you straighten this all out before you started construction?
The city was adamant that they were right, and they chose to file a suit in court to contest this issue. And that's what happened. We believe the ordinance was unconstitutional as applied by these two people, Sheriff Marshall and the building.
But you started construction knowing these requirements. You agreed to those requirements in the plans.
I don't believe that that's the case, Your Honor. There's no evidence in the record that you agreed to it.
Well, you submitted the plans to the city.
Yes.
They were approved. And they said that we have to follow all these requirements of the city. You knew about this requirement of the city before you started. You didn't complain to them when you submitted the plans to them. You started construction, and then you said, wait a minute, we're not going to follow this one. It must be unconstitutional. We're not going to follow it.
That's correct.
How does this sudden inspiration come to you?
Because upon investigation, it was realized that this system won't work. It's redundant. It doesn't make any sense.
Have other builders complied with that condition in the city?
Others, yeah.
City, could you have asked them for a variance? Could you say,
we did ask for a variance on proposition of law number 4.
What was after construction started?
Well, we had 13 vacant lots left here, so the issue of constitutionality still applied to those vacant lots, and the variance was sought from those vacant lots at this time.
Well, I'm just wondering if the reason you found it to be unconstitutional is once you started construction, you found out what the expense would be to comply with this ordinance, and then you figured, well, it must be unconstitutional.
I don't think it was figured that way, Your Honor. I think the Court of Appeals was wrong. I
trial court's decision before you go away. There was a previous judge who had ruled otherwise, and suddenly, all of a sudden, this somehow appears before another judge who vacates.
The case went up in court appeals.
What final appeal order?
No final appeal order, and then was reassigned to Judge Calhoun.
But the first judge that saw it at the trial court said this is just the way it ought to be.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chancellor. Mr. Murata. Submitted to the Court of Appeals? Argued to the Court of Appeals?
I'm sorry, sir.
Was this issue argued to the Court of Appeals?
I don't believe it was, although it
What do we do about that? We have an issue that the Court of Appeals hadn't spoken on. And now it's a proposition of law here.
Well, it is, sir, but because this is a weight of the evidence argument, I believe the Court of Appeals had a duty to look at the entire record. And just as our proposition of law number 3 argues, we failed to make this issue as we failed to look specifically at any of the other constitutional challenges that the Chancellor has addressed. Short, I would simply ask that the Court of Appeals be reversed and that the judgment of the trial court be reinstated.
Thank you. Mr. Schmitz.
Okay, please, the Court. Mr. Cantham, tomorrow. First thing I'd like to say is that Justice Sweeney, I think, is exactly what this case is about. We have some very wealthy developers here. We came into the city of Mayfield Heights. They had a pre-application meeting with the building commissioner. They asked him what had to be done with their plan. They were told that they had to submit plans to the fire marshal, Captain Fletcher, that these plans had to contain an 8-inch fire line that was going to loop up to and around the building, have 2 connections to the street main. They never protested at that time. They went out, they paid an architect or a developer to make the plans. They came back in with the plans that showed total compliance with the ordinance. And it was only until they discovered, I think, just as we hit on, that they're going to save maybe $20,000 a building, which is probably 0.5% or 1% of the building cost, not a great amount, that all of a sudden the ordinance became confusing. And all of a sudden they couldn't understand who they should have gone to have their plans approved, who were already approved, and what they should have done. The term gridiron all of a sudden became vague. It's something that you only apply to the street. And I think our argument back to that all the way through this judicial system has been that a gridiron is simply a system. It's a design where pipelines continue and they have water coming from both ends.
Counsel, if I can understand procedurally what happened, they got the approval, they started construction. Did they actually build a single line and then say we're not complying, or did they stop before that point?
Correct. They have building permits, they have occupancy permits, and they have a single line. They stopped at the single line and refused to build.
And the reason the city filed suit was because they said we ain't compliant. Is that correct?
Right. Right. The city filed a declaratory judgment with Snappy Carvers. They were the first ones who refused to build the loop. We filed a declaratory judgment with Snappy Carvers until Davis Development became an intervener. And Davis also filed a 2506 appeal at the same time.
But by this point, they'd already built the single line and said, we've done it. We're sitting on what we've done.
That's all we're going to do. We agreed to give them a building, an occupancy permit, and proceed with the litigation. And that's where we are.
They have requested a variance prior to construction.
Of course. Yes. When they saw the ordinance and they saw the requirements, if they thought it was too costly or if their property wouldn't allow them to put a loop line on, they could have sought that variance.
Has the city given variances as to this section that we're interested in?
I don't think that a variance has ever been given, Your Honor. But one of the things that we did address here, Mr. Chancellor raised, was the fact that this first property doesn't have a loop system. And that's entirely correct. But if you look at the ordinance, it states that efficient firefighting cannot be carried on from existing public hydrants. Then you have to put this loop. What Mr. Chancellor didn't inform the court of was that first building was on a corner and only 200 to 300 feet from the existing public hydrants. So they were serviceable to that building. These new buildings are 600 to 700 feet from the public hydrants. So they have to have the yard systems themselves.
So the nearness to the hydrant dictates whether or not the loop was involved at all.
Exactly, Your Honor. And the ordinance, section 1511F14B1 specifically states that.
So it isn't accurate to say that there's absolutely no public purpose for this.
It's probably
important for safety.
I think the conclusion that the second trial court came to was probably something that Mr. Chancellor, with his marvelous abilities of litigating, sold to court. Because what he described, well, I'm going to do a little bit different. We'll take the top of the podium here and we'll consider that to be the street main that's going on and on and on. And the front of the podium we'll consider to be the private parcel. And the loop line will go down and across the floor and back up. What he's the breaking city line is down there, no water is going to get to my private parcel, and my loop system's not going to work. A dead-end system's not going to work because we don't have any water coming into the parcel. However, once we do have water coming into the parcel, whatever Cleveland decides to provide us, we're going to maximize the water. We're going to maximize the water pressure produced by my fire department when they have to go there to a fire. Captain Plessinger, in testimony, provided a description of a fire that he fought 20 years ago on a dead-end line where he couldn't use the third hydrant because the first two were being taken up. We get an counter-argument to that. I believe first came up in the Court of Appeal. Here's this pumper. We can attach this pumper. The pumper's going to take more water than the regular hydrant itself, and that's going to make that third hydrant even less viable than it would be on a loop line. And I think that solves that problem right there. This does promote health, safety, and welfare, basic people for sustainable drilling.
Do you want to speak to the issue of the this former fire chief acting as the Fire Prevention Bureau, one-person Fire Prevention Bureau, I guess, or whatever?
Your Honor, if you were going to go to the city of Mayfield Heights, you would not find a sign on any door that says Fire Prevention Bureau. I do not know of any ordinance that identifies who the Fire Prevention Bureau is. Our belief is that the Fire Prevention Bureau was established in the code, as the Collins argued, it's mentioned many times. Since 1974, the evidence has been that the fire marshal has performed that job. My belief is that he is a de facto officer because his authority has never been questioned by a public official or by the public or by the appellants when they needed a building permit to put up their buildings. Also, there is some evidence in the record.
But there's no ordinance and there's no... there's nothing spread on the journal of the mayor, either one. There's no ordinance and there's nothing spread upon the journals of the mayor indicating that this authority is vested or designated in this.
The only official document that I'm aware of that would identify the fire marshal as a person who handled these duties in City Hall is his job description itself, which says that he will review applications and building plans prior to approval. Over 20 years, he's performed that service without question, and including the first building built by Davis Development. They never questioned his authority then, but he didn't require a loop. Now all of a sudden, he requires a loop, and they have to spend a few more dollars, and all of a sudden, he doesn't have the authority. And his authority has been recognized for many years. I think Honorable Judge Gorman handled that question properly in the first trial court decision when he ordered the city to simply identify who the Fire Prevention Bureau was in a more proper manner. I think that should solve that problem without declaring this entire ordinance unconstitutional until you.
Perhaps you've already answered this question, Council, and I missed it, but I think that in much as the Court of Appeals remanded the issue of whether or not the variance was unreasonably denied, you remanded that to the trial court. Does that still have
As far as I'm concerned, it does. That when we leave this court, we're going to go back to the trial court on the issue of the 2506 appeal and not have a fully constitutional ordinance. Of course, if there's any questions, rest on my brief and request that the decision of the Court of Appeals be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Schmitz. Mr. Kanzler, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Yes, 30 seconds, very quickly. Your Honor, Justice Sweeney asked a question in regard to the second building was not built by Davis. The first building was built by Davis, my client, and that was a single line connection. When we came up the second building, that's why Davis intervened, because that was already in court with the city of Mayfield Heights. One other thing real quickly, Your Honor, is because the first corner lot was over here. The testimony in the record is absolute and uncontradicted that the water pressure and the water availability is constant throughout this entire Parkland Street. It doesn't matter whether it's on the corner or whether it's here or here or anywhere else. It doesn't make any difference whether it's on a corner lot or not. The water pressure and water availability stays the same. That same testimony, that's Dalton's testimony, that's Schreiber's testimony, fine, real quickly. In regard to Mr. Schreiber, regarding your question, Chief Justice Moyer, Mr. Schreiber designed for 30 to 50 years, and he concluded that that's how long it would be before
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.